What's up, guys? Welcome back to Conversations with Chris, episode 9. And with me, I have somebody known throughout the Michael Jordan collecting community as Stephen Goat. In fact, I referred to him as that on a previous podcast. It's an absolute honor to have him on. Let me tell you just a little bit about him before we get started. You can find his Instagram page. The username is MJ23CollectorPH. MJ23CollectorPH. It isn't hard to find. You'll know when you found it because as you scroll the page, you will see a museum of Michael Jordan cards as well as LeBron cards, so a little bit of Mike Trout, lots and lots of terrific, incredible cards. A lifetime's achievement of putting together one of the all-time great collections. So, Stephen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and joining me today. And how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, Chris. I'm good. Thank you for inviting me here, and it's an honor to be part of your show.
Thank you, man. Thank you. So, lots of things to talk about here. Your collecting is obviously a big reason why you're well-known throughout the hobby, but there's another reason why you're well-known too. And so before we get to the cards, let's get to some of the hardware that's used to protect cards. And what I'm talking about here is your company, SlabGuard. Now, SlabGuard also has an Instagram page. It's instagram.com/SlabGuard. And I was an early adopter of SlabGuard. Because I had wanted the return of clamshell cases to protect my cards for a long time. I like, and not only do I put my graded cards into clamshell cases by SlabGuard, but I also then put them inside of another plastic baggie. I love the cards to be very protected. So could you tell us a little bit about SlabGuard? How long has SlabGuard been around? What was the inspiration for SlabGuard? How's it doing?
Okay, SlabGuard started a year ago, and we introduced it actually at Nationals, because at that time, many years ago, I bought clamshells to protect my BGS and PSA cards, and unfortunately, I could not find anything in the market anymore, so... And with my growing collection, I saw the necessity to protect my cards. And some of my friends as well have been asking about it. So I decided to, just do it myself because my collection is getting bigger and I have a need for it. And so the other collectors. So I decided to, I'll just do it myself. And, share it to the other collectors. So SlabGuard, it's been a year since the Nationals, and we're doing well. We started with BGS clamshell, and months later, with the success of BGS, then we had to do PSA. So, and I'm hoping maybe in the future we could do some other clamshells for other grading companies, but it would depend on if there will be a growing volume or a growing demand.
Absolutely. So when you introduced it at National, how did people respond to it? I wasn't at National, but I was so excited that you had brought this to the market again. Like you said, it was impossible to find any more clamshells to protect graded cards. And, the condition of the case of the graded card is important. You want to protect it. You don't want to have to get a card recased or reholdered and send it back. And SlabGuards protect the graded cards extremely well. What was the reaction when you brought it to National and you began showcasing SlabGuard to people?
Yeah, during the Nationals, the reception was great. A lot of people were curious about it because a lot of people don't really know about the clamshell because a lot of people right now have been gone from the hobby for a long time and they never really saw the clamshell type of product before. So a lot of people inquired, and through word of mouth and through your show, we gained a lot of customers, and it has been growing. not just here in not just in the US market, but also here in Asia. We have distributors in Canada, Indonesia, and recently a collector from Hong Kong bought a lot of SlabGuard, and also here in the Philippines, because the hobby is growing and the number of collectors are growing as well, and they have been moving to graded cards, so the demand is going up right now.
Well, that is terrific. I also love the fact that it was born out of the fact that you as a collector needed slab guards, and your collection was growing, you needed them. I think some of the very best innovations and ideas in the hobby right now are coming from collectors who just spot something that they need and they fill an important void in the hobby. I just want to congratulate you on Slab Guard and, thank you, because I'm hardly the only person who gets a lot of value out of this product. And, I'm very glad you stepped up and you made it. So let's move on now to the collection, which is, there's a lot of Jordan collectors out there who are going to be very excited to hear you speak a little bit about your collection. And so let me start with this. How did you originally begin collecting? What's your origin story?
Okay. I got into collecting way back 1993. That was the rookie year of Chris Webber and Penny Hardaway. I was at fourth grade at that time, and I saw students from upper batch collecting cards. I saw 92, 93 Fleer cards, and I saw 93, 94 Upper Deck cards. So back when I was a kid, I was always into basketball. Maybe like 5-year-old, 6 years old. I've been watching basketball, local professional leagues, collegiate basketball leagues, and some NBA, because at that time, we didn't really have an access to NBA games back in the 80s. So I saw the upper batch students collecting cards, and I got into it because I love basketball. And the first product that I was able to purchase was a 93-94 Upper Deck packs, which had a cover of Michael Jordan underneath the basket. And I remember being able to pull Jordan base cards and those subsets, like scoring leaders, steal leaders, and those subsets that were featuring Michael Jordan in the various playoff series. So back in 1993, I was a Michael Jordan fan, and at the same time, I was a Penny Hardaway fan. So I collected both of them back in 1993 and all the way up to 1998. So until Michael Jordan's retirement, and that was like the year that the other rookies were coming in. So, and I got into Magic the Gathering cards at that time, and I stopped collecting basketball. And fast forward 2002, Yao Ming from China, he's from Asia, so, and I'm also Chinese, and I wanted to collect Yao Ming. So I collected Yao Ming for about 1 year, but I was back then in 2002, I was still in college, so I didn't really have a lot of money to be able to purchase cards, but I did buy some Yao Ming autograph cards from eBay, his rookie cards, his jersey cards, and it went on to LeBron's rookie class. I was able to purchase some packs from LeBron's rookie year, and I've eventually stopped because I was still back in college, and we don't really have a lot of money to spend on the hobby.
That is for sure. Okay. And so I didn't realize, I knew about Yao. I didn't realize about LeBron and LeBron's rookie year. So you were still active during LeBron's rookie year. Did you retain any cards from that you may have pulled from packs during that period?
Yeah, I still have some cards, but unfortunately, I don't remember pulling a big LeBron. I remember pulling a Carmelo Anthony Fleer Authentics like ticket card. So I think that was my best pull. So it wasn't right. Like I bought a lot of packs in 2003. Whenever I had time to drop by a mall and go to a card shop, I would take a look at people opening packs. And sometimes if I have money, then I would open one or two packs. But that's just about it. I mean, I don't really have a lot of money back then to be able to spend on the cards.
Well, yeah, for sure. It's just amazing how many of us had a very similar arc. 93-94 Upper Deck, I remember those subsets, the scoring leaders, the steals leader. I had 5-10 copies of the Jordan of each of those. I remember the playoff series subset. The trajectory is amazing how we all kind of across the world, we all were experiencing this hobby in a very similar way. And so then you, did you take a break then after, the 2003-2004 and then did you come back or how did that work?
Yeah, I stopped in 2003 and I came back 2012. And it was by an accident because they arranged an NBA Legends game here playing in Manila. So Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Horace Grant, and some other NBA legends were coming to Manila. So I decided to purchase a ticket, a VIP meet and greet ticket. And I started searching on eBay for Pippen, Rodman, Horace Grant rookie cards because, the first thing that you would like to have cards signed are rookie cards. So I bought some rookie cards and watched the game and was expecting for a meet and greet with autograph session. But unfortunately, there was just a meet and greet and a group photo. But towards the game, I was lucky to be able to get Rodman sign a jersey for me. But for the rest, I had Clifford Robinson's autograph on his Fleer rookie card. But for the other players, I wasn't lucky enough to get our autographs. So in 2012, that kind of ignited the fire again. After looking for those rookie cards, I started looking for Michael Jordan cards because these are the cards that I grew up with, and these are the same cards that I wanted to have again. And these are the cards that I never had the opportunity to own them because a lot of Michael Jordan inserts were kind of very difficult to pull because of very high odds, and you have to like break several boxes to be able to pull a Michael Jordan card back then. And I remember back in 1996 or during the 93 to 98 collecting years, my best pull would be a 1996 top super team Bulls redemption card. But unfortunately, I don't have any friends or relatives in US, so I ended up trading it for a bunch of cards that were based on Beckett's book value. So I started searching for cards that I really wanted back in the 90s, those cards that, brings a lot of memories and fun because we enjoyed the hobby back in the 90s. So the only difference is that when I look up on eBay, I saw a lot of cards that were already graded in BGS and PSA. So I decided, okay, if I'm gonna buy some Jordan cards in BGS case already because obviously, if I buy raw cards, it would be very difficult for me being in the Philippines and the cards are being in the U.S. And it's going to, logistics-wise, it's going to be very difficult for me to import the raw cards and send it back to U.S. for grading and have it send it back here. So I decided, okay, if I'm going to buy these cards, I'm going to buy them in graded slabs, which I started with $50 cards that were graded. So these were usually BGS 9 cards, but I was able to buy a BGS 9.5, which was N10s. I think it was below $50, but the rest were usually $30 to $50 for a BGS 9 inserts, like warp speed, beam team, standouts. Those were the first cards that I bought when I came back to the hobby.
And you made a thread on a message board on Blowout Forums. You made a thread that is amazing to go back and look at, considering how far the collection has come over the period since then. And you showed some of those original cards that you were picking up, Warp Speed, some of those great, great Michael Jordan inserts. Tell me what. So that's kind of how it started. And you made this thread chronicling, you know. Tell me a little bit about the evolution of buying, selling, trading, collecting over time. You know, I'm sure sometimes if you're buying from a seller who's in the U.S. or Australia or something like that, it can take time for the item to get to you. Same thing if you're selling. You know, what was your experience like, you know, starting up, having these cards come in? Did you get nervous, worried about the cards arriving? You know, tell me a little bit about that, about just getting started and what it was like buying and selling at that time.
Yeah, when I came back, I tried to look for other ways to ship the cards, because back in early 2000, when I was buying those Yao Ming cards, I had to ship from U.S. to the Philippines, and it would take weeks to arrive. And there were instances that cards were lost or stolen. So I figured out it's not going to be feasible security-wise and costs to be shipping those cards from the Philippines each time I purchase. So I found a forwarder in the U.S. that would be able to receive my cards and hold them for a week or two. And then once they're all ready, then I have them ship out to the Philippines. Basically, they are for a forwarder that handles shipments from U.S. to the Philippines through air cargo. So that's how it all started. And that made my buying very convenient. And it kind of helped my collection grow fast because of the convenience and safety, rather than shipping them directly to the Philippines and having to pay a higher postage and as well as the waiting time. So that kind of helped me fast track my buying. And I don't really sell a lot even until now. So
no, you don't.
I only sold whenever I try to upgrade a specific card. So that's the only time that I would sell. Like if I have a BGS 9 and I'm upgrading to a 9.5, then I would be selling my BGS 9. So that's the only time that I would be selling. And most of the time I would be selling locally rather than selling the U.S. because, you know, logistics wise and expense wise, it's too costly to do it. So I decided to sell it locally. But back in 2012, obviously, people were not really into graded cards. They were still in raw cards, and there were not much collectors left from the 90s, because a lot of us had moved on to college, got work, and never really had time to go back to the hobby. So back in 2012, there were just few collectors. I believe there were just few collectors left here locally, unlike in the U.S. that the market still was still big at that time, although not as big as now. But I could see the evolution from raw cards from the 90s. When it came back to in 2012, they were now all, a lot of them were already graded cards, which is kind of good for us international collectors, because we are buying something that we are kind of assured of that the condition is relatively good, or at least we know that we're paying the right money for the right card with the right condition.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you began collecting, and you started with some mid-level Jordan inserts, but you quickly began going after bigger and bigger cards. And so I encourage everybody who's listening to this to, if you haven't already, I'm sure many of you already have, but if you haven't already, please check out the Instagram page, MJ23. MJ23 Collector PH. I'm on it right now. And you have, just to talk about Michael Jordan cards for a second, you have represented here every era. You have the rookie era. You have this, some of the star sets, obviously Fleer. You have autographed star 101 rookies, autographed 86 Fleer rookies. You have inserts, all of the inserts I think you probably have are pretty close, in BGS 9.5, serial numbered, super short printed cards from the late 90s, 90s autographs, exquisite, you know, you have all of it, man. So how did it happen that you began dipping into these different eras of Michael Jordan cards and picking them up over time, and you know, did you eventually reach a point where you're like, hey, I need to, you know, I'm going to start ramping up here, or was it just one card at a time? How did the collection grow to become the museum that it is today?
Well, like what I said, I started with BGS 9, and whenever I found a 9.5, then I would take the opportunity to upgrade, because going back to the blowout thread, because I was reading through those blowout threads, and it kind of encouraged me to upgrade my collection from BGS 9 to 9.5, because the gold labels are obviously better looking than the silver labels. So, and one of the guys that, you know, one of the guys that I met in blowout back in 2012 was, he got game 15 from Australia. He posted that picture with all the beautiful 90s inserts in 9.5 labels. So that served as an inspiration to me to be able to collect and be able to get those cards one day. So I was buying every year, I was buying MJ inserts, but it was more of like, I started with a $150 budget to $100, $300, $500, then eventually it went up to $1,000. And my first biggest purchase was a 1986 Jordan Fleer rookie card. It was a quad 9, and I held it for maybe a year or two, and then I found a 9.5 at a good price. I think it was around $4,000. So I decided to sell the BGS 9 and upgrade to 9.5. And along the way, I was actually collecting doubles of inserts that I like, because I was thinking, you know, one day it's going to go up. But I waited for a year and it didn't go up, and I needed the money to fund the purchase of Fleer 9.5 and a Jambalaya 9.5, which is a 99.7 Jambalaya. So those two purchased together, it was about $8,000. So I didn't really want to pull up to bring out a lot of cash, so I just decided to sell the doubles and to fund the purchase. So it just kind of evolved through the years, and to be honest, coming from the 90s, I was always an inserts guy. So you could say for the first 3 or 4 or 5 years of my collection, it was always about inserts. It was always about the foil-based cards, the refractor cards. And the only time that I tried autograph, I think it was like 2016 or 2017, because I think I bought a lot of inserts and there were not a lot available in the market anymore. So I started looking for autographs, and eventually it evolved to jersey autographs, patch autographs. So it was really more from inserts back to where I started, and then it evolved to autographs and eventually to patch autographs. And the true rookie card, which I consider a true rookie card, the 1984 star rookie, because it was printed in 1984 versus the Fleer, which is, well, the first pack pulled, but it was printed in 1986. So I'm still missing some key pieces, like most of the PMG and the rubies. Those are the stuff that I never really pursued a lot back then, because I don't know, maybe they were kind of expensive. I felt that I didn't really run after a lot of parallels or numbered cards before. It was only in the past 2 or 3 years that I focused on those numbered cards. I was more of buying cards that were often seen in the early in the 90s, because that's what, because you know, when you were a kid, you were looking up to what people have, and you try to make that as a goal to eventually be able to get those cards when I came back to the hobby. So those were my first targets, the ones that I usually saw but never really had a chance to own it, like Hot Numbers or Hot Shots, those cards. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm exactly the same. Exactly. The first one I went for was 93-94 Ultra Scoring Kings, because that was the one that I wanted so bad when I was a kid, and I was never able to get it. So that was the very first one I went for. You mentioned he got Game 15's famous post of just his wall of BGS 95 Jordan inserts. And I remember stumbling upon that post when I was first getting back into the hobby and just thinking to myself, I could never do this. This is such an impressive accomplishment. But it also was very inspiring. But it reminded me, I saw very early on a Facebook post that you made in one of the groups, and you posted, and it was like Noah's Ark. You had two copies of everything, two of all of these great, amazing inserts. And I said to myself the same thing again. I said, I will never be able to replicate this, but this is a goal. This is inspiration. And that's how the inspiration keeps getting passed on from, you know, guys who come in 1 year to the next, is we all see what the people before us had accomplished, and then we kind of put our own spin on it. And so this gives me a question for you. Looking now, as you have been a buyer, a collector, over the past, you know, coming up on the past decade since you came back to the hobby, what do you think about the state of card collecting in the card market right now? What are your thoughts and feelings kind of about the state of the hobby right now?
Well, I feel that the market is very high right now, because I'm not used to prices being this high, because coming from 2012, having seen everything each year, it was, the prices never really moved this fast. It was a gradual increase. Like, you would be happy if your card price would increase by 10% or 15%. But right now, it seems like 10 to 15% is something like in a week's time or even less. So I understand that a lot of people, from kids from the 80s, from the 90s, are going back to the hobby with a lot more money, and they're willing to pay for the cards that, you know, like me, what they have wanted when they were kids. But I feel like because a lot of money right now coming from, I don't know, maybe stock market or what, that it's keeps the market going up, which I think may not be that sustainable, but I could be wrong because every year I would say the prices are already high, and I don't think it's going to be a lot more higher, but every year I'm proven wrong, especially this year. Especially this year, I'm very surprised with COVID happening. I was expecting prices to drop heavily, but no, the prices instead shoot up to record highs. Something that I have never seen in my 8 years in the hobby, because back in 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, I would say the prices were pretty much stable. I mean, if I paid $300, it would be $350 or $400 in a year's time or 2 years. So there was nothing like double your money in a year or less. There was no such thing back then. So, and I'm very surprised with the current state of the hobby. I understand there are a lot of collectors coming in. Like in the Philippines, I have seen in Facebook groups, you know, the number of collectors joining the groups. You know, we even have collegiate basketball players, professional basketball players coming into the hobby. So it's really, the hobby is really very strong right now. So I'm not just so sure with the prices of the other cards, because Jordan cards have always been stable, and it's not like moving very fast, except for The Last Dance, but generally it has been very stable. But for other players, for other young players, I feel like their prices are way more expensive than Jordan's, than Kobe's, and I'm not quite sure how sustainable the prices are. But I could be wrong, because every year in and year out, people have been saying the market is going to crash or the market's going to correct because it's been very high. But again, we have been proven wrong by the market.
Very well said. Very, very interesting answer. Do you ever look at the state of the market and say to yourself, maybe I should sell a few cards? Does that thought ever, I know you're a collector, a hardcore collector, but I still think the audience, I think many people would be interested to ask that question to somebody like you. Do you ever think to yourself, maybe I should sell a few?
Honestly, in my 8 years of collecting, I've never thought of selling my cards or my collection, because these cards are not just basically, you know, cards that, you know, spent money for, but these are, you know, you spent time on it to chase these elusive cards, because, you know, not because you have the money, you could find these cards. Sometimes you have to be meeting the right person at the right time to be able to purchase these cards. So especially now, there are a lot more collectors. So finding these rare cards is becoming very difficult now. And like what I've said, I'm a collector at heart. I don't see selling my collection in the near future. Maybe I would pass it on to my kids and let them decide what to do with it. But as long as the collection is still with me, I don't see myself selling. Maybe I would be trading my doubles or selling my doubles to fund another bigger purchase. Maybe I could do that. But to sell for no reason at all, I mean, to sell just to raise funds and not being able to buy another bigger card, I don't see that happening, because I really enjoy the hobby. I really enjoy the collecting. I really enjoy, you know, looking up at eBay, Instagram, Facebook to look for cards that, you know, I still need and cards that I still want. So, and while I could say that, you know, I'm pretty much happy where I am right now, there's still cards that, you know, I still want to be able to purchase. And these cards make me happy, you know. It kind of makes a scene while being while working hard on our day job. So I think I'm gonna keep it for the next, I don't know, decades or what. But so far, you know, it's been almost a decade, and whatever I bought back then, still intact up to now.
I relate to that on the most fundamental level. Extremely well said, man. How often do you take out your cards and enjoy them and just lay them out? And, you know, maybe one day you're going through 90s inserts. The next day you're going through exquisite patch autos. The next day you're going through some of the 90s autos. Like, how do you enjoy the collection when it's time to do that?
I would say every time that I have new cards coming in, I would be bringing out other cards because I put them in suitcases. So I would bring out the cards in suitcases and group them together. Like I would group patch autographs in one suitcase. So, you know, I have to move cards every now and then because there are new purchases and, you know, it might not be able to fit that suitcase anymore. So I have to move out some cards. So you could say, like, you know, on a weekly basis, I deal with my cards and try to rearrange it.
Okay. So every time a new one comes in, it gives occasion to look at the current state of the collection as well.
Yes, because sometimes you want to, like, do a pictorial. Like, for example, I recently acquired a High Dimensions, and you want to, like, put them together with Diamond Dimensions and take a picture. It's funny that I don't have High Dimensions. I mean, it's been there for a long time. I've been collecting for a long time, but I didn't really have the chance to buy it. But now I bought one, and I love taking pictures of, like, variations or, you know, like a parallel of one insert from the other. So, like, Ultra Stars Gold, something like that.
Definitely. Okay. This is a question that you're the first collector I'm asking this to, but I think about this a lot, and I would love to get your take on this. How do you explain to friends, family members, business associates, whoever it may be, how do you explain to them if they don't collect cards? How do you explain cards to them?
Wow. Well, actually, cards still known to a lot of people, even the old ones, you know, because they've seen their kids collect cards at one point. But what they don't understand is how valuable and expensive they are right now. So, well, I love talking to my friends, especially those who enjoy basketball. They might not be enjoying cards, but I tell them what I do, and because obviously they're also curious what am I doing with these cards and what are the values. So I try to give them an idea of, you know, the market condition. Like, for example, the recent LeBron gold RPA that was sold on an auction. I tried to share the news to them, and so that, you know, they would still be updated, because there's, at the end of the day, they're still basketball fans. And there are some friends that I got, I brought them back to the hobby. So because I post pictures or I discuss it with them, and they got interested and they eventually came back to the hobby. So these are the same people that I collected with, you know, back in the 90s. So it's always great to find friends, old friends, and, you know, enjoy the same hobby again.
Absolutely. So there's another related question that I think could fit here nicely. What is the you've touched on this a little bit throughout the interview, but maybe just to pull it together, what is the state of collecting in the Philippines like right now? And maybe to the extent that you're knowledgeable about it, in Asia more generally, what is the collecting scene like?
Okay, for Philippines, what I could see is when I came back in 2012, everyone was into raw cards. Everyone was buying and selling cards that were based on book value, Beckett's book value, because that's how we did it back in the 90s. You know, Beckett was our Bible. Beckett was our basis for trading cards or for selling cards. And throughout the years, because of internet, because of Facebook, because of eBay, most local collectors have adopted into the pricing of eBay and other auction houses. So, and I noticed for the past 1 year, people have been very interested in grading their cards, because before we would just only put our cards into the nine pocket binders, right? So, and now they have seen that cards are not just a piece of cardboards, but these are they have a monetary value that comes with it. So people have been very interested in grading their cards from the past 1 or 2 years. And I could say that for this year alone, 2020, I could see a lot of guys have shifted to buying graded cards or wanting to grade their raw cards and be able to protect their investment, because some people would consider their cards as investment because of the value. So I think anyone would agree that, you know, this hobby has somewhat turned into an investment. So people wanting to protect their money and their investment and their cards, so they have shifted to grading cards. And as for the rest of the Asia, I have met big Michael Jordan collectors from Indonesia, from Taiwan, and some from China. The market is very strong, and I know for a fact, obviously, that China is a very huge market for cards right now, especially those patch autographs. I noticed that they have this preference for patch autographs more than the inserts. So, and with NBA being very popular right now globally, I could just see the hobby will just keep on growing for the next several years, as long as we have players that would keep collectors interested in collecting. And I could see a lot of future stars that are coming to have entered in to the NBA and are still coming to the NBA. So like Luka is an international star, so it kind of taps the international market, especially Europe, right? And he has been very appealing to collectors from Asia as well. Like in the Philippines, I know several big Luka collectors. They like him. They like his game, and he's an overall good player. So, and with Zion coming in, like the next LeBron, so many people are excited for the future of basketball, because we are seeing passing of torches from Michael Jordan to Kobe to LeBron, and now to Zion or Luka. So I believe, as long as, you know, we see exciting players coming in, I think the hobby will be very strong.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you for shouting out young Luka. I know that you have a Luka or two in your collection. You've got Brady, you've got Trout, you've got LeBron, you've got Kobe, you've got Penny, Rodman, Dennis Rodman. You've got lots of really interesting and honestly some amazing cards that aren't Michael Jordan. How did that happen? Did you eventually say, I've dominated Michael Jordan cards for long enough, I'll let you guys come in and get a few, I'll go collect some LeBron and some other stuff?
Well, obviously Facebook has a lot of influence to us collectors. And I saw how great, you know, the success of Tom Brady. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to grab some Tom Brady cards. And obviously we are coming from the 80s, 90s, every collector is almost like a Kobe fan. And obviously we also admire LeBron's game. So I decided to buy some LeBrons and Kobes into my collection. Maybe not really a lot. And I also bought, I like collecting inserts or sets that look good together, like epic signatures. Epic Signatures was released in 99, and they featured, you know, the Hall of Famers, the NBA at 50, the greatest NBA 50 NBA players. And several years later, they released another batch. So this is the only set that has that features a lot of NBA's top 50 players, like Will Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Jerry West, Oscar Robertson. So I love collecting guys that are, you know, well, obviously we admired the top NBA 50 NBA players. So we want to have that at least one autograph of those guys. And also, coming from the 90s, we also like autographics. So I bought the 90s guys, Pippen, Barkley, Kemp, Ray Allen, and Garnett, stuff like that. And we also chase after rookie cards. The more popular ones, the chrome rookie cards of Tom Brady, Kobe, and LeBron. And also one set that has a huge appeal to me is the chronology, because it's like a painting with a nice silver autograph on top of it. So I was able to get Jordans, and eventually I got a Kobe, and then a LeBron. Well, basically, you from the 90s, these are the three players that, you know, would really love to have. And then I was able to get a Bird and Magic from our friend Rodman, and recently I also got a Dennis Rodman chronology. So I like the set, I like the design, because that's precisely why we collect cards. You know, we like the design, its uniqueness, and, you know, the autograph adds more flavor to the card. So yeah, and also Mike Trout, we know he's the, well, he is the so-called GOAT of baseball right now, and same goes for Brady. So I was lucky to be able to buy some cards 1 or 2 years ago when prices were still okay, and now that they have really gone up a lot.
For sure. So your Instagram profile, the biography section, says all about Michael Jordan, trading cards. But then it says something very interesting: action figures, 1/6 scale statue. Can you tell me a bit about the action figure 1/6 scale collection that you've put together?
All right. Prior to me coming back to cards, I got into toys back in early 2000. McFarlane figures, they're 6-inch figures, but unfortunately Michael Jordan cannot be produced by McFarlane because of the Upper Deck license. But before that, Upper Deck produced the Pro Shots featuring several important moments of Michael Jordan's career, and I was able and several years ago I was lucky enough to be able to purchase an unreleased set. It's like a prototype of 4 figures that were supposedly for release after the first 4 sets of Pro Shots. But unfortunately, I think the license of the loss of license of NBA's license to Panini somewhat affected the production. So they did not pursue mass producing those figures, and I was lucky to be able to find it from a former Upper Deck VIP collector and get the 4 figures. And the 4 figures were the rookie card pose, the Fleer 86 rookie card pose, the shot against Cleveland, and a certain pose that, you know, reminds us of the 72-10 season. And what's the other one? Double nickel game. the fifth game from the comeback, 1995 against New York, where MJ scored 55 points. So that's one of my, I could say, one of my rarest figures that I could say I own. And also I have, like, starting lineup, those small figures, and Mattel. And also back in, I think, early 2000, there was a product called Danbury Mint. So these are figures made of resin. So they also produce Michael Jordans in sets. And they even produce a Michael Jordan figure, a small Michael Jordan figure, riding a car, a parade car, celebrating Chicago's championship. And also in recent years, Upper Deck got into a contract with Enter Bay. It's a company in Hong Kong that produce 1/6 scale Jordan figures. They work like Barbie. You could change the jersey, the shorts, the socks, the shoes, even the head. So even the hands. So you could create several poses out of one figure, and it looks very nice. So I tried to buy all of the different releases from that product because it featured the Bulls jersey, the rookie years, even the All-Stars, the black jersey, black pinstripe jersey. So, and the shoes, you could change them, like for Air Jordan 1 until Air Jordan 13 or 14. So it was kind of cool to have. So until now, I'm still looking for Jordan figures, but I think there's not much left in the market because Jordan figures were not really mass produced because of the limitation of from Upper Deck license. But I also have, aside from the toys, I also bought a jersey, a signed jersey and a signed ball of Michael Jordan. I think it's a must have for any collector. I only have one though. Yeah.
That reminds me of a story with our friend Rodman. He was in Los Angeles and we went to the shop called The Bullpen, and he bought a signed Michael Jordan ball while we were there. And because he feels the same way, must have, it's a must have item. And it was funny. I didn't know this, obviously. My ignorance will show here, but you have to deflate the ball before you take it on the plane, or else the ball will explode. And so when they told him that, I was like, is that going to mess up the autograph? Like, what? They said, no, you deflate the ball, you put it on the plane. And so Rodman acquired a signed ball. You mentioning that made me think about that. I mean, I'm sure, the figurines are well beyond my knowledge, but I'm looking at some of the pictures of them on your page right now. I love hearing you talk about them. I think that's probably a very interesting area of collectibles as well. So thank you for sharing a bit about that too. Okay, so we're going to wrap up here. And these are questions that I ask to every guest. Same set of questions. The first one, always controversial. But that's fine. It's just a fun question. It's not a question to be taken too seriously. The question is this. What card or player do you think is overvalued and undervalued? And I'll let you answer in whatever order you would like. Overvalued and undervalued.
Okay, for overvalued, I could see Zion being overvalued because his prices are being priced way ahead of his achievement. I believe he has not yet proven enough to warrant those prices. But I respect those guys wanting to bet on him. But I just feel like it's very risky to go into Zion's given the crazy prices right now. I mean, we all know what an injury could make to a player. Like my guy Penny Hardaway, I was collecting him in the 90s and I had like almost 200 Penny Hardaway cards, and his prices back then was even higher than Michael Jordan at some point. But when he got injured and all, his prices dropped, and you know, right now he's just a, you could say, a forgotten star. And, you know, his cards are just, you know, not just as valuable as before. So I think Zion has a lot to prove. While I'm not saying that he may be a bust, but I think at current prices, it's just a very risky buy. And that's just my opinion. And also, Luka prices have been very, really high. But I respect that, you know, there are a lot of fans of Luka, but I just feel that, you know, it's also very high at this point. We have yet to see the best of Luka in the next few years. So maybe if he wins championship, then his value might eventually hold and might even go higher. But those prices are pretty high right now. That it's very hard to touch them right now. But again, for a collector, for a real collector, I feel that, you know, it doesn't matter if it's high or low, because your main objective of collecting is because you love the player or you enjoy the hobby. And I would see investment as secondary. And going to undervalued, having seen the market going up these days, I feel that there are still certain mid-range Michael Jordan inserts that are still undervalued, because, I mean, I have seen LeBron prices go up very high, and also Kobe's. And we all know there's, you know, the price difference of Kobe and Jordan before was like 4-1. So, and right now I could see the gap closing at 2-1. So I was thinking maybe there's some room for appreciation for some Jordan cards, because there's still a lot of Jordan cards out there. But I believe the mid-range inserts, maybe like the $500, $1,000 inserts, may still have some room to grow.
Yeah, absolutely, well said. I want to just echo or like call attention once more to the story you told about Penny Hardaway. That is a terrific piece of insight, thinking about how Penny Hardaway cards were once more expensive than Michael Jordan cards. Yes. Penny Hardaway was an amazing, amazing player who, you know, through no fault of his own, suffered an injury that put his career on a whole different trajectory than the way that it looked like it was going. So extremely, you know, that's that type of experience. I'm so glad you shared that. And it speaks, I think, quite succinctly to the observations you made about what might be overvalued and undervalued in the market right now. And then final question. And I'm very interested to hear your answer to this, because I'm not quite sure which way you might answer this question, because I loved hearing the story about how you went to the NBA Legends game in 2012 and that inspired you to pick up rookies and to, you know, that kind of got you back into the hobby again, and how it was, you know, when you were collecting as a kid, it was watching the local leagues and watching local collegiate and professional leagues, because the NBA was still increasing its ability to have a global reach. So, like, I see that you have deep ties to basketball just as a sport and observing it and enjoying it in general. And then obviously you also have very deep ties to collecting. So I'll be very interested to hear your answer to this question. And the question is this: which do you enjoy more, collecting cards or watching sports?
Well, that's a tough question, because watching live games is on a different level. But I would say I would enjoy more looking at my cards, because, you know, collecting cards is not just merely buying of cards. It comes with a challenge of, you know, finding the cards that you want and getting them at the right time, getting them when you have the money to buy them. So it's a challenge that, you know, makes you search on eBay, search on Facebook, Instagram to look for the cards that you wanted. So I would say collecting cards is a lot more fun than watching sports.
Oh, I love it. I get so many interesting answers to that question, and that's another one. That's definitely another very interesting one. You know, we'll never solve the debate. We'll never settle the debate, but there's another good entry to it. Okay, man. This has been an extremely fun conversation. I've loved learning a little bit more. I feel like you have wisdom to offer for days if we had the time to sit here and just dig into all of it. But you know, we need to wrap it up now. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate you coming on. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention, or to maybe a piece of advice to collectors, maybe, or something like that, before we conclude the show?
Well, what I could just say is that, you know, enjoy the hobby, enjoy collecting, enjoy meeting new people. Investment for me is secondary. You know, the hobby is really more of like collecting and building friendship. And the investment part is just a bonus for us. So that's all I can say.
Ah, very, very well said. Very well said. All right, man. Thank you for coming on, guys. This has been Conversation with Chris, episode 9. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.